So today I'm going to tell you about some recent work about level crossing in conformal field theories. So I will explain you in a second what I actually mean by level crossing, but it will, has to do with some very peculiar phenomena which happening in conformal, particular class conformal field theories. And this talk is based on the paper which appeared in Rakhaev last December. So the outline of my talk is as follows. So first of all, I will kind of review this general level crossing phenomenon in conformal field theories. And then I will start sort of trying to argue that even though level crossing happens in particular examples, there should be no level crossing. And this level crossing is a tradition with so-called von Neumann-Wigner non-crossing rules that goes back to beginning of last century when people were trying to analyze such phenomena in quantum mechanics. And then after we understood what goes on with those level crossing, I will show you a couple examples. And this will be mostly two theories. One theory will be maximally supersymmetric four-dimensional so-called n equal 4 Young-Mill theory. And then I will switch to theory conformal field theory in three dimensions, also showing you this phenomena happening there. And finally, I will conclude with some speculations about possible application of this level crossing phenomena. So let me start with kind of general overview of conformal field theories. And to simplify situation, let me consider only scalar conformal field theories, which I would denote here by letter O. So you have a full set of scalar conformal primary operators. And as you know, conformal symmetry allows you to fix two and three-point functions of those operators. So two-point correlation function are fixed up to some coefficients delta I, which are scaling dimensions of the operators. And then three-point functions is fixed in terms of variables alpha, which are linear combination of scaling dimensions. As in numerator, you have this coefficient C, I, J, K, which enter into the OPE. Another way, if you will collide two operators, let's say O1 and O2, the same coefficient C1, 2, 3 will appear describing the linear contribution of this operator O3. That is the reason why people usually refer to those coefficients as so-called OPE coefficients. And if you combine together information about delta and C, this goes under the name of conformal data. This conformal data is sufficient to specify all set of scalar conformal primary operators. And then if you start going from theory to theory, you will see that those conformal data, they depend on various parameters. Sometimes it's a coupling constant. In more complicated cases, as gauge theories, it will be some additional Casimirs of internal symmetry groups, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So in general, you think about those conformal data and some slowly varying functions of intrinsic parameter of your theory. And then once you have this information, you could go further on. And for example, you could consider four-point correlation function. So if you have this four-point correlation function of those scalar operator, you could apply OPE to decompose this four-point correlation function of so-called conformal partial waves or conformal block. In this case, you decompose of conformal block in the channel 1, 4, or you could go decompose in the channels 1 and 2. And obviously, you will have two different representations for the same correlation function. So these relations, so-called crossing relations, turned out to be quite powerful. And recently, there was a lot of progress which goes under the name of conformal bootstrap program. Namely, people use this crossing symmetry relation to put constraints on the possible conformal data. And in some cases, which I'll review later, namely in the case of the dimensional conformal field theory, this conformal bootstrap leads to quite spectacular results. So this is a kind of the overview, but now why I'm interested in this picture? I'm interested not only in this picture, but I'm interested in very special situations. Namely, imagine you have conformal data, and then you start looking how this conformal data varies the function of the parameter, and imagine you encounter a situation with certain values of the parameters, two of the operators have scaling dimensions which are almost exact. So this will be exactly this limit which I want to consider. I'm asking why I consider this particular limit. As you will see later, these limits exhibit some unusual features of, for example, three-point function. You will see that in this particular limit, three-point function have some very interesting behavior, and exactly this behavior which I want to analyze. So now let me be more concrete. Let me give you example of one of those conformal field series. And this will be example which I will be later using quite intensively. So let me spend some time defining you this series. So we're talking about four-dimensional maximally supersymmetric Young-Mill theory. And this Young-Mill theory has Lagrangian written here. So you have, as usual, gauge fields. And then you have scalars and fermions. So I didn't put fermions because they wouldn't play any role. and what follows, but I will make use of the scalars. So here you have six real scalar fields. So this capital index I runs from 1 to 6. And those scalars couple to fermions and gauge fields. And this theory has two parameters. One of the parameters is the coupling constant, and another parameter is the rank of the gauge group. And since theory is conformal, coupling constant doesn't run, it's like external parameter, and it becomes convenient to combine together rank of the gauge group coupling constant, define so-called Hoof coupling constants. So once you have this variable defined, you could start computing various quantities in terms of so-called topological expansion. For example, for scaling dimension, which I defined before, you could arrange expansion which goes in powers of lambda, Hoof coupling constant, in 1 over n. And for SUN gauge group, the expansion actually goes in powers of 1 over n square. So here you have leading term, first subleading term, et cetera, et cetera. So expansion is infinite. So the first term, by definition, taking account contributions of the Planar diagram, and it depends on the Hoof coupling constant. So the first subleading corrections is 1 over n square, et cetera, et cetera. So in terms of the conformal data, what you would like to understand, you would like to understand those variables delta I as a function of Hoof coupling constant and n. And the first approximation, you could think about the planar limit. And actually, this planar limit has been studied quite intensively. And there is general belief that you have now, by now, information about this function tending value of the coupling constant. And this happens because this particular theory has some yet another symmetry, which is symmetry appears only in the planar limit. And this symmetry has to do with so-called integrability. It happens that as far as leading contribution is concerned, symmetry has some additional symmetry, which is powerful enough to predict the dependence of this quantity on lambda. So let's now be more concrete. Let's sort of kind of try to specify various kinds of the operators. So we're talking about composite gauge invariant operators of the smallest possible dimensions. Since you have scalars, which is field, which is dimension 1, the simplest operator could describe the one which is bilinear in scalars. So you have two scalars, the same point, take it trace. And then since each of the scalars has these upper indices, you could decompose this trace into two reducible components. One of the components will be symmetric traceless tensor, which transforms with respect to certain reducible representation of this OC6 group. And another will be scalar, the one which you have phi I, phi I. So this second operator goes under the name of the Kanishi operators. And this first operator goes under the name of so-called O20, or half BPS operator. So this name half BPS refers to the fact this operator has some additional symmetry. Namely, it's annihilated by part half of the supersymmetries. And this property turned out to be quite important because I will show you later this operator is protected. Namely, its scaling dimension as when a certain correlation function don't depend on the coupling constant at all. In other way, computing conformal data for this operator, you just need only three-level diagrams. This is not the case for the Kanishi. And finally, I will introduce another operator, the so-called double trace operator, which you could think of like a square of this first operator. So you have trace, trace, and then you contract indices previously making them symmetric and traceless. So notice there is factor 1 over n. So this factor 1 over n was introduced to ensure certain normalization conditions for these correlation functions. Namely, this 1 over n ensures that correlation functions of these operators scale like n power 0 for large n, just question normalization. So how you would find deltas of those operators? So there's a very standard procedure which allows you to compute those delta perturbative link coupling constant. And this basically has to do with so-called degeneralization of dilatation operator. Since theory is conformal, you have dilatation operator, which is one of the symmetry of your theory. And then you could study protein dilatation operator. And for each of these operators, you could define its corresponding scaling dimension of the series and the coupling constant. So now let me tell you what we know about scaling dimension of these operators. As I told you a few minutes ago, once you go to the planar limit, we know almost exactly the scaling dimension of these operators in the planar limit as a function of Hoof coupling constant. So let's start first with the Kanishi operator. So I told you the Kanishi operator is the one which built out of the scalars. Therefore, its canonical dimension is equal to 2. And once you introduce interaction, it develops anomalous dimension, which in the planar limit is function of Hoof coupling constant. So if you now go at weak coupling for lambda small, you turn on perturbative expansion, and you could go quite far. You could go to 5, 6 loops, and here I just put you the first corrections, which appears from our calculation. So this correction is positive, meaning that the scaling dimension of the Kanishi as a function of Kruf coupling constant is growing as you increase coupling constant. And actually, you could do even better. If you go to the strong coupling, you could use ADS-CFT correspondence to predict the behavior, the leading behavior for these scaling dimensions at large values. And there is also some sublimiting correction which people have computed to quite large extensions. So to summarize, what you have here shown by red, this is the dependence of the scaling dimension of the Kanishi of the coupling constant. So it starts from 2 for zero value of the coupling constant, and that indefinitely grows. So what about double trace operator? So double trace operator, if you remember, it was obtained by squaring half BPS operator. And since I told you the half BPS is protected, what happens that scaling dimension double trace operator in the planar limit is simply twice the scaling dimension of half BPS operator, which is 4. So if you're thinking about scaling dimension of the double trace operator as a function of coupling constant, it's just flat. It's just 4 for any value of the coupling constant. So now you see at these two curves, you immediately see that there's a certain point at which this operator intersects. And this happens around lambda equal 15. So this point will be basically the one when these two curves cross in the planar limit. So what does it mean? First of all, lambda of order 15, it's not something which locates neither at weak or strong coupling, somewhere in between. And this makes this analysis of this point quite complicated. We don't have for the moment any tool which allows us to analyze these regions to quite big accuracy. But anyway, we will come to this later. But nevertheless, you see from this picture clearly that there is level crossing. So level crossing is there in planar limits. But as I will tell you in a second, there should be no level crossing. So I already mentioned there is famous von Neumann-Wigner non-crossing rule which prohibits this to happen. But let's see how this comes about. Let me first review this rule. So this rule goes back to the paper which was published in 1929, and it has to do with the following picture. So imagine you have two-level quantum mechanical systems which is described by the following Hamiltonian. So you have Hamiltonian given by Hermitian matrices 2 by 2, with diagonal elements E1, E2 corresponding to the energies of two states. And here you have some interaction energy which is proportional to some parameter G. And what the gentleman did, they asked the question, what will happen if level E1, E2 are slowly varying as a function of some parameters in such a way that they cross? Another way, thinking about E1, E2, like two dashed lines shown here. So E1 is energy level which slowly varying goes like that. Horizontal axis, you have some parameter which is describing this variation. And here you have level E2 which goes like this. And then obviously they cross, very much similar to what we've seen before. But now what happens if you introduce this interaction? So once you have this interaction, it becomes trivial exercise to analyze this matrix and to verify that actual eigenvalues of this matrix actually do not cross. So if you go through diagonalization, you find obviously these two eigenvalues. And if you now plot these two eigenvalues on this picture, you will see that what will happen is this level will repel at that point, so that one will go like this, another will go like that, and they will never cross. As they never cross, moreover, you could easily find that the distance between these two curves, the minimal distance that you could approach, is proportional to the coupling constant. Another way, as soon as there's interaction between two levels, they cannot cross. Of course, you may have a situation where there's some other hidden symmetry or some quantum numbers which prohibit this interaction. Another way, it may happen that these two levels have different quantum numbers, so the interaction couldn't happen. So if there is any symmetry which prohibits interaction, obviously crossing could happen. But if there is no any symmetry, another way, if these two levels have exactly the same symmetry with respect to all possible symmetries, level crossing is prohibited. These are statements which is known in quantum mechanics a long time ago. So what about our problem? So we're dealing with quite a different system. So namely, we would like to understand property of scaling dimensions. But as I will show you in a moment, actually the problem of finding those scaling dimensions is the same problem as we just saw in a moment for diagonalizing this Hamiltonian. To see this, let me sort of review the well-defined procedure how you compute scaling dimensions perturbatively. So imagine you have two operators, OI or J, and now you want to compute corrections to those scaling dimensions of the operators. So if at three level, Born level, they have a scaling dimension delta, then you know that due to interaction will start to mix. And normally this mixing happening at the coupling through the appearance of so-called divergences, which exhibit here, logarithmic behavior of x square, with some coefficient front, which obviously proportional to the coupling constant, there is some matrix. So this mixing matrix is exactly the one which describes the mixing between two operators. And as you know very well, in order to find the true scaling dimension of these operators, you have diagonalize these metrics. And this metric is actually nothing else, a dilatation operator. In other words, if you're thinking about dilatation operator acting on these two operators, you could easily convince yourself this matrix H staying here is exactly dilatation operator acting on the operators. So as soon as you diagonalize this matrix H, you will find the eigenvalue, the same eigenvalue that will parameterize the scaling dimension of the operator. So in that context, finding scaling dimensions of operator iterating theory, it's a question of diagonalizing mixing matrix or dilatation operator. And now the main point comes that if you're dealing with a unitary conformal field theory, then dilatation operator, or equivalently this matrix H, has to be a unitary operator. Another way, in any conformal field theory, this matrix H ought to be Hermitian matrix. And if it's Hermitian matrix, we are back to quantum mechanics. In the quantum mechanics, as we just see in a moment, level cannot cross. Moreover, the fact that the matrix is Hermitian assures you that all scaling dimensions are real. So the general properties of unitary conformal field series tells you immediately the scaling dimensions should be real function of parameters, and they cannot cross. So these are exactly this von Neumann rules implication of conformal field series. So once you have two operators which couldn't interact with each other, in other words, they have same quantum numbers, they cannot cross. However, I just told you in the very beginning of my talk that if you take this two particular operator, double trace and Kanishi operator, they did collide in the planar limit. So now we obviously have a problem. On one hand side, general properties tell you there should be no level crossing. On the other hand side, I demonstrate you explicitly that level do cross in planar limit. So how could you reconcile these two properties? And the answer turned out to be quite interesting. It turned out that actually this planar corrections is not good corrections in the situation of level cross. In other way, this one over n expansion that I was telling you at the very beginning, this expansion here, it's not well defined in the vicinity of point with the level cross. So as I will show you in a moment, this expansion becomes actually divergent as soon as you approach level crossing point. It is exactly this divergence which will be a signal that something goes on, and after we will resolve the divergence, you will see the level crossing actually will not take place. But let me show you how it comes about. So again, let's simplify situation as much as possible. Let's imagine that you identify two operators such that their scaling dimension becomes degenerate for certain value of the parameters. Let me denote them O1 and O2. So those two operators which you found by diagonalizing mixing matrix, and then you see that for some value of the coupling constants, they could approach each other quite closely. So then if you're staying in a situation when these scaling dimensions are different, then conformal symmetry will tell you that this operator cannot interact. In other words, if you compute the two-point correlation function, conformal symmetry will tell you that at least the planar limit should be zero. So what happens if you go beyond planar limit? So if you go beyond planar limit, you could put here all possible corrections, right? And as I told you, normally non-planar corrections will appear suppressed by powers of n square. But now some interesting things happening. Namely, if you now consider a situation when these operators are close to each other, and close each other by the amount which is 1 over n, you will see some enhancement. Another way, instead of being 1 over n square, the first Slobodin correction to this two-point correlation function will be 1 over n, times some function phi, which we don't know a priori. So I remind you that normally this situation occurs at strong coupling, and at strong coupling you don't have any tools to analyze situations. So here's some function phi, which is there, and there's 1 over n in front. So if you put n to infinity, correlation function vanishes, we're best to the planar limit. But now let's try to see what could we say about this function phi of x squared based on kind of the general properties of conformal field theory. So once you have this correlation function be different from zero, this is a signal that these operators start to mix. And once they start to mix, you have to resolve the mixing by introducing their linear combination. So you start with operator 1 or 2, and to compare, you construct this two linear combination with some unknown coefficient C1 and C2. And then you require that these two new operators, which you denote here O plus or minus, should satisfy conformal symmetry constraints, namely, their two-point correlation function should vanish. So now let's try to substitute these two operators into this relation to see what kind of the consequence you could get. So if you substitute these operators in this correlation function, you will get this very simple relation. So this function phi of x squared divided by n squared, the sum coefficient C1, C2 will be equal to sum of these two terms, each of them being two-point correlation function of O1, O2, with delta 1, delta 2 being corresponding scaling dimension. And now, taking account that delta 1 and delta 2 very close to each other, you could continue this relation by expanding its differences between delta 1 and delta 2. So these are how you get these logarithms, right? So now let's compare left-hand side and right-hand side of this equation. So on the left-hand side, you clearly see 1 of n. So if you put n to infinity, left-hand side will vanish. So what will happen now on the right-hand side? It also should vanish. And now you see what could happen. If delta 1, 2 is large of order 1, the only way how this term could vanish if C2 vanishes as well. But now we're dealing with quite interesting situations, that delta 1, 2 is over the 1 of n. And therefore, in these particular situations, this term stays like 1 of n, and it will talk to this term. So in this way, in the situation where delta 1, 2 is small of order 1 of n, this equation has a trivial solution. And the solution is the following. Function phi of x square should scale logarithmically with some coefficient gamma, and this parameter C1 and C2 will satisfy quadratic equation. So this equation is unperturbative. In the sense that we didn't specify function phi, we just consequence of these general constructions. And the consequence of this parameter gamma is also some unperturbative parameter, which we don't know how to compute, but it just parameterizes the leading contribution of function phi. So I put here in red because you will see this parameter gamma will appear later in my talk. But once you specify the parameter gamma, you solve quadratic equation, you will find parameter C1, C2. So you know these two operators, you know function phi, and then you could keep going computing two-point correlation function operator with itself, from which you deduce correction to its scaling dimension. And in this way, what you will find is that after you introduce this funny function phi or parameter gamma, the new operators, the truly conformal operators in this particular region when scaling dimensions become close, are given by this formula. So plus or minus referring to different operators. And you see that now the parameter gamma sits inside the square root, and there is gamma square over n square. So obviously, if you take n to infinity, going back to the planar limit, you will find that the delta plus delta minus are equal delta 1, delta 2, so you're back to the planar limit. But now this correction takes into account interaction between two levels, and it induces you non-planar corrections. So now, if you remember this formula, it's already appeared, right? When I was telling you about this von Neumann crossing rule, exactly the same formula appeared, and at that time, this formula appeared as a given value of certain matrix 2 by 2. And now you could easily construct the corresponding matrix. So this formula corresponds to eigen values of this matrix 2 by 2 with diagonals being delta 1, delta 2, which you could think like energies of two states. In the off-diagonal elements, gamma of n, interaction energy. So you see this parameter gamma, which appeared before, now has very clear meaning. This is a parameter which describes the interaction between two energy levels. And if you compare this with formula which you have seen in my previous slides for perturbative diagonalization of dilatation operator, you will see that this is exactly the same formula with the only difference that instead of having here coupling constant, here parameter gamma over n. So another way, in the situation we have level crossing, it's 1 of n which plays as a parameter, excuse me, it's 1 of n which plays the role of the coupling constant, a small parameter of the expansion. So now you have this formula. And you could easily verify that if you vary delta 1, delta 2, these two functions will never cross. Actually, they will approach each other by the amount, which is gamma of n. So this parameter gamma, as I told you, define you this minimal energy, minimal distance between these two levels. They repel each other, and they will never approach closer by this distance. So now let's try to play with this formula. So I told you this formula take into account non-planar corrections, which are parameterized by gamma. Now let's try to expand this formula in powers 1 over n. Obviously, you expand the square root, and here what you will get. For example, for delta plus, you will have linear contribution delta 1, and here you have the first correction. So you see this correction goes to powers 1 over n square, as you're expecting. But here you have a pole, right? For delta 1 goes to delta 2, this becomes pole. Here you have cubic pole, et cetera, et cetera. So you see what goes here, that if you were to compute this quantity perturbatively, it passed 1 of n, you will see that each term of this expansion becomes more and more singular. It's only after you sum this expansion, you will construct the formula which is perfectly finite in this transition region. So this level crossing is avoided after you sum infinite number of singular corrections to all order in 1 of n. So planar expansion breaks down, but if you sum them carefully, you will find the formula which is perfectly consistent with these non-crossing rules. So this, as far as scaling dimensions are concerned. Now, what about second part of conformal data, about coefficient, OP coefficients. So now let's try to see what could we say about OP coefficients. So we defined two conformal operators, which are denoted before O plus minus. And now let's take two operators, which are denoted here by phi, some good operator in the sense that scaling dimensions are well separated from scaling dimensions of these two operators. And let's try to compute such OP coefficients. So you take square of three-point function dividing by the two-point function of the operator. So this combination doesn't depend on the normalization of the operator O plus minus. Then you just open bracket substituting expression for O plus minus, and what you obtain? You obtain explicit expression for these two coefficients in terms of two other coefficients, C5501 and C5502, which are OP coefficients, these two operators in the region where they don't cross. So you start with two operators which approach each other, and before they cross, you have these two explicit functions. And these two relations tell you how these OP coefficients changing once you're entering into the crossing region. So C1, these are functions defined before the solution quadratic equation. Here you split expression. And once again, you expand the powers 1 over n. So your leading term will be like this. So it has 1 over n, there's subleading 1 over n cubed, et cetera, et cetera. As before, you have some poles indicating that this expansion should be resummed. But interesting thing here is the first term. See, it has 1 of n correction. So the fact that it has 1 of n corrections implies that if you plug this C1 into this formula, you will find that expansion of these two coefficient functions will involve 1 of n as well. So what you will find through this formula that planar expansion of these two coefficients involves not only even powers of n, but and also odd powers of n. And these are very strange. Why it's very strange? I told you at the very beginning of my talk that you could compute any four-point correlation function by expanding it over different operators propagating different channels. Now think about this correlation function. I take correlation function of four operators, phi, which are very good operators in the sense that the scaling dimensions are well separated. So for this correlation function, nothing pathological should happen. It doesn't care about these two operators which collide with each other. In other way, its expansion should run only powers 1 of n squared. There should be no 1 of n corrections. On the other hand side, if I will look for the contribution to this four-point function coming from these two operators, I will have to conclude that each of these operators will produce a correction 1 of n, right? Because this coefficient function depends 1 of n. So something should happen, those corrections will cancel. And if you go through the analysis, you will find that for this correction do not appear, you have to impose yet another condition. And this another condition tells you that if you have these two operators, 1 or 2, which are about to cross, if they cross, they have to satisfy the following relation. In other words, their three-point functions with this operator phi have to satisfy these relations, which means that a large n, one of the three-point functions should be smaller than another one. This becomes extremely non-trivial and very powerful condition. Why? Because if this condition is not satisfied, then this operator cannot cross. So it becomes a kind of selection rule. So if you have two operators, one or two, and you verify this condition is not satisfied, then this tells you they cannot cross. The other hand side, if they are satisfied, then it's necessary but not sufficient condition. But if you will see this condition in the example I will show you before, if I show you below, it will be satisfied. But just keep in mind, there should be always hierarchy between coefficient function of operators which collide.
So this means there are no crossing between single traces?
Exactly. Exactly. One of the consequences, exactly as you mentioned, that if it's staying within the class of the operator 1 or 2, which is single trace operator, the relation is not satisfied and there is no crossing. And actually, you know this also from another source, because as I told you, there is an integrability property, and integrability holds the planar limit. As a consequence, all single trace operator could be described using the integrability technique. And with the integrability technique, each operator comes with certain quantum numbers due to integrability. And having different quantum numbers is another argument why there cannot be collision. But this relation tells you that it could be well collision between double trace and single trace. It is exactly what we've seen before, right? As I told you at the very beginning of my talk. So well, let me summarize what we have learned so far. So here I give you just a picture. The one to the left shows you how scaling dimensions vary. So we started from some region when these two operators have distinct conformal weights, and then we just vary coupling constant, and we see that some moment they start to cross. And after we resolve the crossing, actually this level repel, the one shown by red goes like that, shown by blue goes like this. So what about the corresponding coefficients? So I told you that for these two operators to collide, their three-point functions should be satisfying this condition, 1 over n. So indeed, If you're staying away from the quartic region, you see the one of the coefficient function is big and other is small. So there's a big suppression, which I've seen in a second. And now you see what happens with coefficient function. So the one with the red goes like this, one with the blue goes like this. So comparing these two pictures, you clearly see the difference. Scaling dimension cannot cross, whereas three-point functions, they have to cross. So there is no crossing non-crossing rule for three-point functions, but there is a cross non-crossing rule for coefficient, for scaling dimensions. And this picture actually described by this very simple formula. So these two curves, red and blue, are just different square root entering into this formula. And once again, this is parameter gamma. This is parameter on the p2p of gamma, which defines the shape of these two curves. So now let's try to see how this formula looks like if you expand it to the powers of 1 over n. Another way, I want to see how this red curve looks like and blue curve looks like just at the beginning when this operator approaching to each other. So for the one which is blue, which starts from 1, I will get the first corrections, which is 1 over n square. This is what you expect. But there is a double pole, right? So what's special about this? You start from 1, the first correction will be badly divergent, double pole, with the residue of the double pole being gamma square. So what about the red one? So the red one is small. You see it's suppressed by 1 over n. But then what you'll find, the first term which appears here, it already has a pole. And obviously, the residue of the pole again is a gamma. So the signal for this level crossing phenomena, that one of the coefficient functions will be 1 plus corrections, but another one will have a pole already in the leading order. And as you will see now in a second, it's exactly this behavior which you will see in all examples. So keep in mind this formula. Let's now go to the particular example. So this was general picture, which was very general in the sense I didn't specify you conformal field theory. But now we're going to check how the general picture works in particular examples. And here is the very same example I told you before. So we're again staying within this maximally symmetric Young-Mills theory. And we want to understand the scaling dimensions of two operators. The first operator is a Kanishi operator. You remember the same operator we have seen before. And second operator is double trace operator, which slight generalization we have seen before. So before, I had a double trace operator, which was dimension 4 operator. But now I put more scalar field in such a way that this operator has J scalar field in one trace, J scalar field in another way, another operator. In total, there's two J scalar fields. And these angular brackets refer to the fact that each of these tens are reducible with respect to SO6, namely symmetric and traceless. And once again, here you have factors in the denominator, and these factors were introduced in order for two-point functions to behave like n power 0. So what could we say about scaling dimensions of these two operators? First, at weak coupling. So in the Born approximation, as I told you, when coupling constant is 0, Kanishi has dimension 2. Double trace dimension 2j when j number of scalar fields. But now you turn on interaction. For Kanishi, as we already have seen, first correction becomes proportional of the Hoof coupling constant. And for double trace operators, it's also proportional to Hoof coupling constant, but there is n square suppression. So if you take n to infinity, you will have scaling dimension is 2j, but now you have lambda appearing in the numerator. So what happens if you go to strong coupling? So at strong coupling, idea CFT gives you very definite prediction for the Kanishi operator. As I told you, Kanishi becomes monotonically increasing function. Here you have the first term and the first two leading corrections. So what about second operator? For second operator, idea CFT gives you also very definite prediction, which is also quite nice. So the first corrections coming at strong coupling, it actually doesn't depend on the coupling constant, and it's suppressed by the n square, with the coefficients in the numerator being some polynomial depending on the number of scalar fields. And obviously, there are some corrections which are suppressed both by powers 1 over n and by powers of the Hoof coupling constant. So now you compare these two functions and immediately conclude, similar to what we've seen before, that if you plot these two functions, the function of Hoof coupling constant, you will see that these two curves will cross each other. And they will cross each other for values of lambda, which is j power 4. And since we have strong coupling, lambda goes to infinity, it means that j also should be large. Another way, here we're dealing with situations that you have a crossing of Kanishi operator with these double trace operators in such a way that the number of scalar fields, j, scales with the coupling constant lambda. So these are two very big operators. So now let's do one step further. Now let's talk about three-point correlation functions. So I told you that the peak coefficients could be read from three-point coefficient functions. We have conditional double trace operator which potentially could cross. And now I want to take peak coefficients of conditional double trace operator with very special operator, which is this operator. These are also protected operators, half BPS operators, which involves J scalars. And conformal symmetry tells you that this correlation function of this operator with Kanishi, with double trace, have very special form. So they have a numerator, the same coefficient function C, and in denominator, you have parameters which depends only on conformal weights of these two operators. So now let's start with first computing this coefficient here. So you start with this three-point function, and what you do first, you go to the planar limit. So in the planar limit, you could show that since this operator double trace operator, its three-point correlation function factorizes in the product of two three-point functions. And actually, each of these three-point functions could be reduced down to two-point correlation function of half BPS operator with itself, plus some corrections suppressed by one of n squared. And since this operator is very special, I told you it's half BPS operator, its two-point function is protected. Actually, it's one. So from this, you will read that in planar limit, this coefficient function staying here, just one, plus some corrections, one over n squared, which are due to the planar contribution. Good. So what about Kanishi operator? For Kanishi operator, Minahan and Pereira, 2 years ago, they computed these coefficient functions, and there's quite a very nice expression, which has a very unique property. Namely, if you start analyzing this behavior of this coefficient function, the function of parameter j, you will find that a certain value of j, this coefficient function develops a pole. Namely, when lambda becomes, when j becomes of order lambda of 1/4, you will find that this pole behavior is a very special residue. So you have a pole. Which means that if j becomes very close to this value of lambda, this three-point function blows up. So what's special about this position of this pole? So if you're thinking about the position of the pole, you will see it's exactly the same point when these two operators collide. So another way, pole appears exactly as a point when these two operators become degenerate. So you have a very fine correlation between level crossing and the appearance of singularity of three-point functions, which exactly what I told you before in the general situation. So now let's try to match two formulas. So one formula here comes from the specific calculation. So I told you these are three-point functions with double trace operators, this is three-point function with the Kanishi. And on the right-hand side, I have shown a general formula with some parameter gamma, which I told you is non-intuitive parameter. Now let's compare left-hand side and right-hand side. And you see there is perfect match. So one function starts from 1 plus some non-planar corrections, and there's 1 plus some corrections. Another had a pole, and indeed this was the property of the leading term. But now what you can do, you could compare residue of the pole, and you will see that comparing residue of the pole, you could extract the value of the gamma. And in this situation, you could see that gamma is just given by this expression, some power of j divided by 12. And I remind you, j scales like lambda, so actually this is a quite large parameter. So what you conclude from this, that double trace and Kanishi operator, a strong coupling, indeed they interact, the interaction is quite large, scale like this. But once you identify parameter gamma, you could take these formulas and plug it the value of gamma, and you find very definite prediction. So this becomes definite prediction for the behavior of scaling dimensions and three-point functions in the vicinity of crossing point. So now if you just take, for example, second formula, you could easily verify that this coefficient function stays perfectly fine in the crossing region. So contrary to what we've seen in previous slides, when there was a pole, now there is no pole. Everything perfectly consistent with general property of conformal field theory. And this happens because we resolve the crossing, and indeed, you could also easily verify from the first formula, delta plus minus, defining it to function which never cross. So as soon as you resolve the crossing, you identify parameter gamma, you come up with definite prediction for the behavior of the conformal data of this operator is vicinity of crossing points, and you're in perfect agreement with phenomenon Vignon crossing rule. So this is an example which happened in strong coupling. Now let me show you another example, which is also interesting because this is the same theory in equal four, but now you will see that crossing happening at weak coupling. So for this, I have to introduce the phonon operator. So once again, I'm staying within the class of the scalar operators, but now I'm dealing with so-called V2 operator. So I start with an operator like this, which involves S power of covariant derivative projected on some Lycoin direction. And those operators have been studied quite intensively in general conformal field series. And so what they could show is that if you start with these iterators and you start computing the scaling dimensions, at Born level, it's just 2 plus s, 2 from scalar fields, and s from number of derivatives. And then there is some anomalous dimension. And what's special about this anomalous dimension is that for large values of spin, it grows logarithmically with the spin, with some prefactor which goes under the name of the cusp anomalous dimension. So this cusp anomalous dimension is known both at weak coupling and a strong coupling in planar limit. But what we'd like to understand now, whether this operator could have a chance to cross with something. So if you fix lambda being small and increase s, you will see this anomalous dimension could grow indefinitely. And therefore, its scaling dimension could approach any value you like. For example, if you consider an operator like this, so you take half BPS operators, another half BPS operator, and you put s power the derivative. In this case, you will have an operator which formally has the same quantum numbers as this one. You will find its scaling dimension is 4 plus s, 2 plus 2 and s. And there is some anomalous contribution. But contrary to this 2 operator, its anomalous contribution actually decreasing with s. So if you go to large s's, it becomes very small corrections. So therefore, you're talking about scaling dimension being 4 plus s. And now if you compare these two formulas, you will find that as soon as anomalous dimension of these 2 operators approaches value 2, there will be collision of these 2 operators. So what does it mean? So if you substitute gamma s into that formula, you will find that this happens exactly for lambda being 1 of the log s. And since s is large, we're talking about a situation when Hoof coupling constant is much smaller than 1. So this phenomenon of level crossing between these 2 and these 4 operators for large values of spin happens at weak coupling. And once you're in weak coupling, you have full machinery of computing anomalous dimension, coefficient function perturbatively. And this is a very nice exercise because in this case, you can control everything analytically. And indeed, Aldai and Bisi, again, 2 years ago, they computed the following three-point correlation function. So you start with 2 half BPS operators, you put these 2 operators, and you compute this coefficient, or T coefficients. And what you will find this nice expression with 1 over n, because it's suppressed by n, and there is gamma function, which has this funny argument, 1 minus 1 half anomalous dimension of these 2 operators. And now if you compute the same OP coefficient, but with these 2 operators, but very much the same reason I described it before, you will start with 1 plus non-planar corrections. So now if you compare this to formula, you immediately conclude that this three-point function will blow up at the pole of gamma function for gamma s equal to 2, which exactly the condition for level crossing. So at the level crossing point, three-point function develops a pole. And looking for the residue of the pole, you will find the value of the gamma, this interaction energy. And in this case, interaction energy becomes actually small. It behaves like 1 over s. And if you express this in terms of the power of the coupling constant, you have this very funny exponentially suppressing corrections. So at weak coupling, these 2 levels cross for large values of spin, but the corresponding energy becomes exponentially small. So strong coupling for conditioned double trace crossing happened with large interaction. At weak coupling, crossing of double of twist 2 and twist 4 happening at weak coupling exponentially small interaction. But in both cases, you resolve the crossing, and at the end of the day, you obtain all coefficient functions, scaling dimension, which are perfectly consistent with non-crossing rule. So now let's go to another theory. And this theory is three-dimensional conformal field theory. So as I told you at the beginning of my talk, there is a conformal bootstrap program which allows you to put very strong constraints on possible conformal data of various conformal field theory. And this program was extremely successful in three dimensions. Namely, there were two groups of people, Ratatze et al. And El Shouk et al., who are analyzing the spectrum of possible scaling dimensions using conformal bootstrap in three-dimensional conformal field series, and they come up with quite interesting observation. So namely, they found that all possible values of scaling dimensions of scalar operators turned out to be restricted by certain domain. And then this domain had quite interesting phenomenon. It has some cusp point. And then they argued that actually this cusp point could be identified based on their quantum numbers with the position of a critical point of three-dimensional Ising model. So then they went on and they started looking more carefully into resolution at this point just to see what kind of the properties different operators have. So what I show you here, these are on the left and on the right, there is some data they obtained from conformal bootstrap approach. And what's shown here on the left, these are scaling dimensions of various operators. And on the right, the corresponding three-point functions. So in this conformal bootstrap, there is one parameter which plays a role of kind of the phi parameter. So this delta sigma is a parameter which defines the scaling dimension of the lower scalar operator. So it's a continuous parameter which varies along horizontal axis. And for each value of this parameter, you identify certain operators living on the boundary of allowed region. So here I put here first three curves corresponding to the values of scaling dimensions on the boundary of allowed regions of twists, of spin two operators. So the lowest line here is the one which is extremely flat, telling you that we're dealing here with a protected operator of dimension three. And it's not difficult to convince yourself that actually this operator is nothing else than a stress energy tensor of this series. It's conserved, therefore the dimension will be protected, and it's protected. So the one which is red is the first excited operator. It's called T prime. And this scaling dimension varies in this region. And what you will see is that there is some point, this point, in which something interesting happened. Namely, at this point, there is very funny collision between this operator, which are next to T prime, and the operator T prime. And this point, you see, you recognize some familiar picture. It looks like you resolve the mixing of two operators. So once again, this is just a result of numerical analysis. So then what you go to the right, and what is shown on the right, so for each of these operators, you then measure three-point function, namely three-point function of this one of these operators, with two other operators being exactly this scalar operator. So you're talking about OP coefficients of two scalar operators and spin two operators, and then you just follow along the same horizontal axis. So for black curve, the one which stress energy tensor, its three-point function should be protected, and it's protected. It takes some value. Then you have red curve, which goes like this. And here you have blue curve, which goes like that. So quite complicated functional dependence of these two curves. So first of all, you recognize there is no level crossing here, but there is crossing of three-point function, which is exactly what we've seen before. But there is another interesting phenomenon. Let's follow this red curve. You'll see that if you just follow this red curve, exactly at the point when this crossing happens, the corresponding value of three-point function drops. And if you carefully look on the vertical axis, this logarithmic scale. Another way, if you were to measure this three-point function, you will find that exactly in these transition regions, the corresponding three-point function drops by two order of magnitudes, which led these people to speculate that here you're dealing with a phenomenon which is very similar to so-called operator decoupling to dimensional conformal field theory. It looks like this operator decoupled from the spectrum, which is quite an interesting phenomenon. Well, but now let's try to analyze this picture. Could we sort of give some analytical formula describing these quite complicated curves? And as I told you, this curve looks like you're dealing with a crossing of two operators. So let's play this game. So imagine we want to understand this picture as corresponding to the crossing of operators shown here, red and blue. And if you follow this game, then instead of plotting these two curves against delta sigma, what you have to put here on horizontal axis is not delta sigma, but a better distance between these two lines. You remember that in my previous formulas, the parameter which was controlling the variation of the data, it was distance between the corresponding levels which are about to collide. So what I do now, I take this picture and plotting them not as a function of delta sigma, but as a function of the difference. And then you see something interesting happens. The same picture looks like this. So what's shown here by dots, these are numerical data. And what's shown here by red and blue, these are analytical formula which I've seen before for very special value of this parameter gamma, which I defined interaction energy. So you see that this scaling dimensions is vicinity of crossing point behave exactly as we predicted before. And if you now go to the corresponding three-point functions, they follow exactly the same behavior. So from this, you conclude that actually this picture which people found through numerical solution conformal bootstrap is perfectly consistent with the scenario that following the boundary of large region, you have a situation with a crossing of two different operators. And quite remarkably, this crossing happens exactly at the point when three-dimensional easing is located. Another way, by some reason which we don't understand, three-dimensional easing model is located exactly at the point when you have collision happening, which suggests that we get another symmetry which should be corresponding to this point. But there's a question which should be analyzed. So now let me now come to.
Okay. Did this happen for the OM case?
For?
OM?
No, I don't think for OM there is any precise data like this. At least you see that if you're thinking about this analysis is quite complicated, delicate analysis, because normally for this conformal bootstrap, the way how it's conformulated, it's formulated in such a way that you have this crossing symmetry conditions, which is saturated by finite number of scalar operators in different channels. But here we're dealing not with the scalar, but it's spin two operators. It's much more delicate analysis. And I'm not saying it's impossible, but at least the analysis that I was using is the one which corresponds to this particular case of the Isaac model. Ah, very good. So you remember this parameter gamma? So I told you this parameter gamma is something non-perturbative parameter which we don't know how to compute, but you could fit it. And actually what you will find, the corresponding interaction is actually quite small. So 0, 1, 2, 6. So this means that these two operators which collide at that point, they interact weakly.
So there are some weakly
broken. You could say so, but once again, we allocated this point. All these pictures are non-perturbative in a sense. You cannot get this picture. There is no any approach, analytical approach, would allow to reproduce this picture based on the first principle. A posteriori, let's say, this is a kind of picture which you interpret a posteriori. You want to use this data to deduce something about physics which goes on for the three-dimensional Isaac model. And if you take these two pictures, actually what this picture suggests, remember I was telling you that there was speculation that this operator shown in red should decouple from the spectrum. Well, this picture tells you actually it doesn't decouple on the spectrum. It gets exchanged with the next excited operator. And this is a difference with respect to the dimensional conformal field series. For dimensional conformal field series, indeed, you have exactly null state. It decouples. So obviously, for three-dimensional conformal field series, there is no reverse Fourier symmetry. And a priori, there is no reason why it should have null state. And this analysis suggests that indeed there is no null state. Simply, you have interaction between two levels so that the OP coefficients get exchanged. But the number of states still the same before and after the collision.
There are no states, but not negative
dimensions. What do you mean negative dimensions? First of all, there cannot be negative dimensions because you have unitarity which prohibits them.
So the null states are not unitary values above two dimensions.
Ah, no, in that sense, yes. But for example, you could stay within a two-dimensional Isaac model, which is unitary conformal field theory, which still has null states. But in general, you could say differently that existence of null states would signal about the existence of some extended conformal symmetry, like Virasoro. So if for three-dimensional Isaac model you did have some null state, it will be the first step in defining symmetry which goes above conformal symmetry. But I'm saying, okay, what I'm saying based on the data that I don't see null states. But I see quite non-trivial interaction between different states exactly at the point of the three-dimensional Isaac model. So now let's come to some conclusion and speculation. So I was trying to argue that based on a few examples, we have seen that even though in the planar limit for n equal 4, you see some finite crossing level phenomena happening, this happens only because you're doing the planar limit. So one of the lessons of this talk is that the recitation of planar limits doesn't work. Actually, as soon as you have level crossing in the planar limits, there should be a signal that planar approximation fails exactly at this point. And another consequence of this, that sometimes people are discussing about the asymptotic behavior of scaling dimension, and if you're thinking about this picture, the picture I have shown you before, so if you're thinking about what could be the maximum value of scaling dimension in equal 4 theory, then this picture tells you, for example, if you start from Kanishi operator, which was sort of growing indefinitely, that because of the level crossing, actually the Kanishi normal dimension will be saturated. It will never go indefinitely far. So this level crossing is good in order to understand the structure of the eigenvalues of dilatation operator in n equal 4 theory. And as you will see in a moment, this is also yet another hint for so-called S-duality. So what I have shown you so far is that if you using this resummed formula, you're avoiding level crossing, both scaling dimensions are repelling, three-point coefficient function are regular, as they should, everything is restored. But now what could be sort of possible implication and possible continuation for this work? And one of the application, possible application have to do with so-called S-duality in this maximum symmetric Young-Mills theory. So it's widely expected that this theory for finite n You remember first in each group, should have yet another symmetry. And this symmetry in the first approximation could be thought as a symmetry between weaker strong coupling expansion. Namely, if you defined this particular combination coupling constant over 4 pi, denoted by h, and it's convenient to introduce some parameterization by tangent phi, then the spectral dilatation operator should be invariant under replacing h by 1 over h. That is the reason why it corresponds to the weak coupling duality, weak strong coupling duality. And if it ends of the phi, it means that if you were to plot scaling dimension as a function of phi, the corresponding spectrum should be invariant under changing phi over pi over 2 minus phi. So you expect it to have some kind of symmetric function then. But that is the reason why it's extremely difficult to test it, because this symmetry operates for finite n, so there is no way you could use planar approximations. And moreover, this weak strong coupling duality for finite n is not something which could analyze analytically. Nevertheless, we could speculate. So now let's start with the Kanishi operator. So Kanishi operator becomes the first operator. The first means the lowest one operator whose scaling dimension is not protected. Another way, it develops some trivial dependence with coupling constant. And then you could ask yourself a question. So once you have operator H, what will happen with this Kanishi operator if you apply S-duality transformation? And then there's two possible scenarios. One scenario that somehow this operator will stay invariant. So if it stays invariant, then it would mean that its scaling dimension should be invariant under the transformation. So another way, we're talking about so-called modular function which is invariant under this transformation. But actually, there is some argument which shows you that most likely Kanishi is not invariant. What does it mean? It means that if you apply S transformation, this Kanishi will transform into yet another operator, sometimes it's an operator called K prime. Still, if this scenario is realized, then you're expecting to find in the spectrum of dilatation operators this operator K prime, and S duality will tell you that scaling dimension of the operator K prime will be related to the scaling dimension of Kanishi by this transformation. Or if you go to phi, it's just very simple linear transformation. Okay? So now if you're thinking about these functions, you immediately find that if you put here, for example, phi equal pi over 4, or here h equal to 1, you will find that these two functions have to coincide. In other way, if you're talking about second scenario, you have operator k, k prime satisfying these conditions, you immediately run into problem that for some value of the coupling constant, this operator ought to cross. No way to avoid crossing. But as I told you, they cannot cross. Another way, once you have two states which cross, you have to resolve the crossing. So how this happens? So here I show you two lines. So the one which is shown here by dashed line corresponds to some hypothetical behavior of Kanishi normal dimension. So you start from some weak coupling expansion, and then you assume that its Kanishi definitely grows to infinity. So on horizontal axis, I put here phi, this angle phi, right? So then for dual operator, you're expecting to have function like this, which differ from the Kanishi by the flip with respect to this vertical axis, right? Just condition of S-duality. And as I told you, they have to cross. So this becomes exactly the point they're crossing. So if you're now thinking about this point, at this point you're having two operators, k and k prime, whose scaling dimensions collide. But then I told you that once you introduce interaction between those operators, collision wouldn't happen. They will repel each other. So after they repel each other, what will happen is that one of the functions, the one for Kanishi, will follow blue line, another will follow red line. But now if you look at these two lines, you immediately see that both of them explicitly symmetric under exchange phi to pi, phi, pi over 2 minus phi. Another way, as soon as you have two operators which are related to each other by these S-duality transformations and to resolve the crossing, you're automatically getting almost for free the picture for the scaling dimensions of the operator which perfectly consistent with S-duality. Another way, level crossing gives you a hint how this S-duality of dilatation operator could be restored. But there's a couple of questions. So one, the most pressing question, that I introduced the operator k prime, right? The one which it sits right here. And this is a kind of a mysterious operator because as follows from this picture, it has a very peculiar feature that its scaling dimension, if you use the energy at the coupling, is infinite. And we don't have any operator like this among the known operators. It should be extremely non-local, non-trivial operators. We don't know how to define it. And secondly, as I told you, there's a lot of symmetry in this theory. We know there is integrability in the planar limit, there is conformal bootstrap approach, et cetera, et cetera. And it should be possible to test this picture or this operator using those additional techniques. So these are kind of the very important questions which await solution. Thank you very much for your attention.
In this case, what's the size of the gap?
Very good. So this size of the gap So how would you formulate the problem of calculating size of the gap? For this, you will have to measure two-point correlation function of this between the k and k prime exactly at this point, which is point for coupling constant being of order one. So first of all, these are non-perturbative regime. And these are situations where you cannot rely on the planar limits. So in other way, you have to start with the SU2, as I mentioned, similar situation. You take SU2 gauge group. You have to find the way to compute correlation function of these two operators for coupling constant for the one. These are exponentially complicated non-perturbative problem. Let me finish. But then there is conformal bootstrap. And what conformal bootstrap tells you that it more or less tells you constraints on the possible value of conformal weight on your operator. And what actually people did for an equal 4 bootstrap, they found the maximum value of the first unprotected operators. Another way you see this black curve, it cannot exceed the value which is the one corresponding to this point. And what we know from this conformal bootstrap, we know this value. So we do have some information about the maximal point this curve could reach.
For any SUN,
there is values for SU2, and then there's interpolation for any N.
But the conformal bootstrap unfortunately cannot see the red curve, right?
Yes. Unfortunately, the red curve will correspond to the first excited state. And once again, for conformal bootstrap, there's always price you're paying that the more operators you include, the much uncertainty you introduce in the final prediction. But I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm saying conformal bootstrap allows you, it's one of the approaches which allows you to answer these questions non-perturbatively. But you wouldn't see the shape. What you will see more or less you will see this gap. What you could expect to find from conformal bootstrap, you could find the distance between, minimal distance between two levels.
But also you predict the distance of k prime.
It's up in absolute, yes. But once again, in some sense, you could avoid answering this question by presenting another bit of information, namely about three-point correlation function. In some sense, why do you need to know the form of the operator? If you know all three-point functions of this operator without the operator, it's sufficient to specify the operator in conformal field theory. So in other way, if there is a way to compute three-point function of the operator k prime with, let's say, half BPS operators, it will be sufficient.
Is there any other question? All right, if not, let's hang for a second.